Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello, are you ready for some travel? Boy, I am. Let me tell you, Michael Higgins, who is my guest this evening, has put out another amazing book. This is Exploring Wine Regions in Mexico. And Michael is with me right now. Michael, where are you? You're not in Mexico right now, are you?
I'm not in Mexico. I'm in Pasadena, California.
Oh, my goodness. Are you taking a sabbatical?
You know, my next book is on Greece, and so I'll be leaving for Greece in a week.
Oh, my heavens. Well, I'm so glad we've had this opportunity to chat because, as always, your books on travel and wineries, my goodness, anyone would enjoy them. But this one on Mexico just took my breath away because
of the
photography and everything else. But I want my listeners to know about you because you're not just an author, you're a photojournalist as well as a publisher, of course, but you decided that you were really going to become engaged with wineries. And my goodness, you have been associated with TripAdvisor. You have been deeply involved in the wine and hospitality industry. So this has been a real passion for you. How in the world did it come about that you decided to go to Mexico? I mean, this gives such a magnificent demonstration of not just the Mexican culture, but the people, the art, the tremendous sophistication that exists there. You know, most of the time, all we hear about with media is the cartels. And everybody just goes, oh, yay, do I really want to go down to Mexico? They hear all kinds of horror stories. But wow, what a beautiful presentation you make of this phenomenal country.
I go often and I feel safe.
And that's good.
And you know something, as long as you're not in the drug business or weapons business, they're not interested in you.
Well, that's a good thing.
So it's great.
That is wonderful. Well, I'll tell you what, when I opened your book, and the very first photograph I saw just astonished me. I am not in, I'm in wine country up here in the state of Washington. I mean, Oregon and Washington have been known for their wines. But I have never seen a piece of equipment like this one that you have on your introductory page of your book. And it is a nighttime harvest. And this
That picture, isn't that incredible?
It is.
Yes.
What a vehicle. I mean, the lights on it. So it's...
You know, Mexico is not just making wine. They're making high-quality premium wine. And one of the ways you do that is to pick the grapes when it's cold, which is nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you're seeing this tractor with the lights, because they're picking at night.
Wow. It was a real education. Let me use that word. I went, wow, look at the technology that is being employed here. And I think many, many times, dependent on what our experience has been and dependent on what our travel opportunities have been, there are so many of us that know very little about our neighboring country, Mexico. And again, so much of what comes through in media in little short spurts makes you wonder, gee, do you really want to go down there? Is that really a place you want to be? But there's so much in the way of beauty in this country.
I can tell you why. The primary wine region is in Baja, Mexico, Valle de Guadalupe. And that region has the same high quality aspects that we call terroir as California does. What Napa, Sonoma, Paso Robles, Santa Barbara have are valleys that get warm And then the Pacific Ocean is cold and it comes in and cools it off. That's exactly what happens in the wine region in Baja, California. They have the exact same thing. And that's why they're able to produce great wines.
Incredible. And of course, your photography is just amazing. Now,
well,
thank you.
That's my favorite part of doing the books. I love the photography. I love to get beautiful images.
Oh, yes. And each and every place that you went and the history. That's another thing. Even if someone doesn't drink wine, there are so many phenomenal places that you could visit and communities that you can visit. And my goodness, it equals any of the places you might choose in other parts of the world. It's just wonderful. But let's go into a little bit.
I'll tell you something funny about the food.
Oh, what's that?
When I was down in Valle de Guadalupe for the first time, I got a text message from a friend of mine in Los Angeles. And I told her I was in Valle de Guadalupe. And she goes, oh, my gosh, I go there like 3 to 4 times a year. And I said, well, tell me which wineries. And she goes, I don't go for wineries. I go for the food. The food is off the charts. You know what it's like? It's like being in Beverly Hills at a Michelin star restaurant eating international gourmet cuisine at 75% off.
Oh, my goodness.
That's what it's like there. It's incredible. And then you can throw in great wine to mix with it.
Oh, just wonderful. I would like for us to chat about the history of wine in Mexico, because you met a beautiful woman, Maria Isabel Ramos Abascal.
She wrote the foreword.
Yes, yes, yes,
She's
of course.
She's a talented, talented writer, I'll tell you.
Wow. And these images of the wineries and the people working on the ground just really is phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. And the history of winemaking goes back as far as Cortez. And I went, really? And I'm reading this and I'm going, 1500s? Oh my goodness.
The oldest winery in North America is in Mexico. It's not in California, Oregon, or Washington. It's in Mexico.
Incredible.
Did you read that part about how wine was the instrument for Mexico to get its independence from Spain?
Mm-hmm.
That's like crazy, you know, when you think about how countries get their independence. And this one was fighting over wine, which gave them independence over the whole country.
And I thought to myself, some things never change, especially in politics. And the wine from it keeps going like the Energizer Bunny. The wine from New Spain caused, and I'm quoting from your book, caused Spaniards to protect their own interests, leading to a decree issued by the Spanish crown in 1728, imposing a high tax on New Spain's wine that were sold in Europe. Oh, I don't think they ever go away. I think it's like death and taxes. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it made the winemakers mad. And the revolution began.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I was sad to hear about in the mid-19th century that 2/3 of the European vineyards were just totally destroyed because they got hit with a plague. And
the phylloxera.
Then the wine from Mexico ended up becoming very popular. So the history is incredible.
It's really interesting, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's just amazing. And this is something, again, you don't hear a conversation about. We hear here in Washington, we'll talk about the Washington
wines.
But
you know, when you speak of history, I wrote about three wine regions, and one of them is Guanajuato, which is in the mountains north of Mexico City. History. They have a little town, a village called San Miguel de Allende. It's UNESCO, spectacular, cobblestone streets, big church in the center. It's a lively, creative, artistic town it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the wineries are all around that town. Like, you can go and stay in this really cool town and then go visit the wineries during the day.
Mm-hmm. again, the history that you have here, and my goodness, their future is pretty well established. I think they're just going to grow. But you found that there were 40 wineries that your associate told you about. But I was also fascinated with this old photography that you were able to gather, showing the old machines that were used for making wine. And, you know, this is just something that opens our eyes, not just with the beauty of the photography that you've done, but it opens our eyes about how much we don't know many times about a country, about a people, and about an industry like the wine industry, which is one of many. But the sophistication that these people have, it's wonderful.
People think of tequila when they think of Mexico, as they should, right? Because tequila is famous in Mexico.
Oh, yes.
But people don't realize that the wine regions there and the wines they're making are excellent wines.
Mm-hmm. They are. In fact, the viticulture, and you mentioned Baja a few minutes ago, goes back more than 300 years. And again, I'm quoting from your book. And it began at the mission of San Francisco Javier in 1699. So the missionaries and the monks.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
And that winery from that mission and those missionaries is still alive today. It's the third largest winery in Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Just absolutely beautiful. In the Valley of Guadalupe, there's the Bruma Winery and Hotel. And the photograph.
Oh, the Bruma. Oh, my gosh. You found that one.
Oh, yes.
Is that place amazing?
Oh. It has a desert-like environment surrounding it. In this pool of water that is the spectacular, majestic tree. It's the only way I know how to
describe
it.
You're talking about that pool of water with the tree coming out of it.
Yes.
And if you look there to the right on that page, that tree goes underground, and that is their wine cellar.
Yes.
Is that just amazing?
It is absolutely amazing, because to build that wine cellar around that tree.
Right, and then put a little lake on top of it.
Yes, and it's a sculpture. It is absolutely
beautiful. And that little building you see behind the tree, that's the wine tasting room. So that's your view.
Just incredible. And when you went inside the wineries, and obviously you were given a fabulous tour with each and every place you went to, because the photography just illuminates what they are engaged with. But in this particular winery of El Aicito, I noticed that all of their storage tanks in the photograph, which is amazing, it seems like they go on forever, and you have the wines that are stored that are just, that storage area is breathtaking. But with this, the sanitation and everything is just so present. There is this meticulous attention and care that they give to it. And they've won medals for their winery, the El Aicito.
That winery, a couple of interesting things. You know, you're seeing those huge tanks. That winery produces 50% of all the wine in Mexico from one winery.
Wow.
And there's 100 wineries in that valley, and they're still producing that much wine.
Well, that explains why the storage tank area is so massive.
It's so big. But let's go back, whatever it is, like 40, 50 years ago, they hired a winemaker from Italy.
Hmm.
They brought him over. He starts making wine. All the wine is just high-volume wine, not high quality, but high volume. And he decides that he wants to make a high-quality wine. He brings Nebbiolo over from Italy, from where he's from, and he makes the first premium wine and wins lots of awards and then inspires all the other wineries there to start making premium wines.
Oh, my goodness.
This is like the winery that made the turning point, and when he made the turning point.
Fascinating. And my goodness, the terrains, the different wineries and the different terrains that they have. And when you've got the north sun-facing region,
right,
and you have these, I'll call them hills, maybe they call them mountains.
Well, it's a valley, so these are hills on each side.
Yeah, but the arrangement, it's of the vineyards and the surrounding bushes and trees. They're beautiful to look at. Did you take a plane at some time to take images above the wineries to get these phenomenal photographs?
I did not do any aerial photography in this book.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I was either up on top of something getting images.
That is something else. Now, there's an authentic hacienda, the Adobe de Guadalupe.
Oh, my gosh. Is that place amazing?
Oh, wow.
I love that place.
Now, you're gone for weeks at a time. How do you make these arrangements, Michael? Because you have to have a team that's working with you. Who helps you to travel to these different areas? And if I remember correctly, you don't speak Spanish. Is that correct?
I do not speak Spanish. I know a lot of words, but I don't speak Spanish. But in Mexico or California or now Greece, wherever I'm going, I work with both the winery associations and the tourism organizations, and I have them create my itineraries.
Aha! Uh-huh.
That's how I get that done. They know their wineries better than I do. I give them my parameters, and I do only one winery a day. That's why you see such quality with each winery, is I only do one winery a day.
Well, and that makes sense to me, because it's just all-encompassing, and the food. Oh, my goodness. If you are not hungry, by the time you finish looking at all of these images in this phenomenal book of exploring wine regions, and this is totally oriented towards Mexico.
I'm getting hungry just looking at this, talking to you, and I've already had dinner. Hey, but you know, there's something you mentioned that I don't speak Spanish. One of the things I put on every page is what languages they speak at those wineries and
mm-hmm.
restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And almost all of them speak English.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I can't even think of one that doesn't. I'm sure there is one. But for the most part, they all speak English.
Biodynamic farming. The first certified organic vineyard in Mexico. And you know, I can remember 24 years ago doing an interview with a winery here in the United States that they were taking like half of their grape stock, and they were putting that into an organic growth. They were doing testing, and they said that they found that the wines that they were producing in the organic environment, this was 24 years ago, that it really was tasting differently. And so they were going to be going all organic and not using, you know, anything artificial, chemicals, et cetera, to affect the wine. But this is the Finca La Corredilla.
Yes. Okay. Yep.
Okay. I probably massacred that because I don't speak Spanish. But
I do know how to pronounce Spanish words. I'm good at that.
Well, good. So pronounce that correctly for my audience, because they probably say, oh, Donna, you really mucked this one up.
It's Finca La Corredilla.
Corredilla. Okay.
Corredilla. That double L is yeah.
Yeah.
Corredilla.
Corredilla. All right.
Oh,
beautiful.
And the double R vibrates. So Corredilla.
Well,
if you really want to give it some emphasis.
Yes. And
organic is the way to go. The grapes are better grapes. The better quality makes better quality wine.
Mm-hmm.
And wineries all over the world are getting smart about this. The chemicals are not good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And learning how to let chickens run around to get the bugs and all that kind of stuff. I've heard
exactly.
different stories from different people, but It is. It's a challenge because nature is not always kind. And there's all kinds of stuff that can come in and destroy grapes, not just weather, but also different kinds of pests. So it is an ongoing challenge that anyone in agriculture of any level is going to always be aware of. And then at the Vinicola Sierra Vita, that draft horse is utterly magnificent.
Isn't that great?
Oh, what a beautiful, beautiful animal. And here in the United States, I don't know that draft horses are used all that much in agriculture or in the wineries, but in this particular place it is.
Tractors have replaced, the horses.
Mm-hmm.
And machines have replaced the picking of the grapes.
Oh, yes.
But there's a lot of wineries that get back to the basics, hand-picking the grapes, using horses to go through the vineyards.
Wow.
You know, the natural's producing better grapes.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, that Sierra Vita, they have an amazing restaurant there. Oh, my gosh. Back to food again. Turn the page and look at that food.
Oh, I know. I'm surprised you aren't as wide as you are tall.
You know, I am slender, but I'll tell you the funniest thing. When I travel, and I'll travel for like a month, when I come home, I weigh less, and they feed me like a pig. I mean, all that food you see, I ate.
I know.
So they feed me like a pig, and I come home lighter. Go figure. I think I'm just so active and on my feet that mm-hmm. I burn it off.
Well, you probably do. And, there's so much that you give out, and I love this one photograph at the Bordigas Magoni Winery and Camilo Magoni, and you've got a picture of him and this beautiful library. I mean, this is just spectacular. But the image of the outdoors with this winery, with this magnificent tree, and people have a chance to sit under it during the heat of the summer. It is just, to me, it's sort of romantic. It's just absolutely beautiful, peaceful. What a wonderful place to get away to.
Look at that tree that you just sit under and taste wine.
Mm-hmm. And have conversation.
Mm-hmm. Is the Italian that L.A. Cetto had hired from Italy that made the Nebbiola that introduced high-quality wine to this valley.
Yes.
See, he retired after 40 years of working for that winery. And while he was retired, his daughter insisted he had his own winery. And he didn't want to do it, but she said, I'll run it. So she runs the winery.
Incredible.
And that's this winery here, Bodega Magoni. So it's got his name on it. And that's his library of all the books he's collected over the last 40 or 50 years.
Wow. Then you had, to my surprise, rooftop beer tasting. And they've won the Best Brewery in Mexico award twice.
That's right.
Yes. And this is a microbrewery. And my gracious, here in the Seattle area, that is really hot stuff. People love the microbreweries of different beers they come up with. And you got to go inside, and there again, here's all of this phenomenal equipment, stainless steel, all of this that you were able to see and to photograph. It's really something. This is quite a business.
It is. What a place. And then the rooftop, look at the sunset.
Mm-hmm.
Sipping a beer, a really good one, too.
Ensenada. Now, Ensenada, the photo, why I ask you if you did aerial photography, because this image
it
of
looks like
Ensenada,
it,
it's way, way up. Where did you go? How could you?
I climbed to the top of a hill to get that picture.
Wow.
I'm way up on top of a hill.
It is huge. Ensenada is a very, very big city.
Isn't it pretty amazing?
Mm-hmm.
Lots of great restaurants.
Oh, so many restaurants. And you give information about places to visit, like their downtown museum. And the flavor of the culture is so there. And then I had to chuckle. There's Italian, authentic Italian cuisine that when I look at it, I go, oh, in Mexico, authentic. But that's why you go anywhere anymore. You have all of these different cultures and foods that people can experience.
Most of the food at most of these restaurants are not Mexican food. It's international cuisine from all over the world, made in really gourmet style.
Well, I will tell you, your picture with yourself and the monkey is priceless.
Oh, Rebecca, that's my girlfriend. She fell in love with me. She would not let go. They were trying to give her food and everything, and all she wanted to do is hug me and kiss me and play with my hair, and it was just, it was so adorable. But I'm an animal lover, so I fell for it.
Yes, you did. But this, you were at the Pai Pai Ecotourism Park, and they, you know, they have all kinds of animals there, and it, they rescue animals from all over Mexico.
Right, they rescue animals, and this is where they take care of them.
That is something else. And then, you brave soul, you were with a nine-month-old African male lion. How did that lion get into Mexico, for heaven's sake? It belongs in Africa.
Isn't that crazy? I know. Well, that's why he ended up getting confiscated and came to this place. But, boy, you know, I remember where our arms kind of like locked together, you know, circled around. And I started pulling, and he started pulling, and I tried to pull more, and that little nine-month-old lion has a lot more strength than I do. It was pretty funny, actually.
Yes, I can imagine. But after
I got to play with him for maybe 30 minutes until he was becoming too, you know, cat-like. Mm-hmm. You know, he just wanted to play too much, and his teeth are bigger than mine. His fingernails are bigger than mine. So we decided that it was time to let him play by himself.
I think that probably was very, very wise. Very, very wise. Now, San Miguel de Allende Village.
Yes.
That picture you took of their church is spectacular.
Isn't that amazing?
Absolutely spectacular. The architecture is breathtaking.
This is really an amazing place. And it's no wonder it got a UNESCO heritage site.
Absolutely.
I mean, where
true.
Do you see a church, a building that looks that amazing?
And in the 1800s, this mission that established, you know, that was part of the church, obviously, that it had more than 24,000 animals that it was taking care of.
Isn't that funny? It's amazing, actually.
Yes. It just shows you there's so much we don't know. And when you have a chance to travel, you have a chance to learn
discover
things. I mean, and that's the gift, one of the many gifts that your book gives is some of the history, the people, the diversity within the cultures. And they're our next door neighbor, the country of Mexico.
Here, they're not far.
No, they aren't. And that is something that when someone is wanting to go to Mexico, are the protocols changing with flights? What would you say to someone that had never been to Mexico that wanted to go the first time? What would you want them to know, Michael?
Well, if they've never been before, going to Valle de Guadalupe, because it's only an hour south of the border, so they're really close to the United States. And I put in there the guy who was my driver.
Mm-hmm.
They can hire him as a driver. He'll come to the border, pick them up, take them to the restaurants, the hotels, all the wineries, of course. And he's bilingual. That would be an easy way to do it. If you've never been to Mexico, don't know if you feel comfortable, he would be the guy. Mm-hmm. And I would think that's the wine region.
Mm-hmm.
Could go to those other wine regions, but now you're in depth into Mexico. You're going to rent your own car, but you can do it. I mean, you see in my book, I got maps. I plot the wineries on the maps. And with each winery, I've got their address, their name, address, phone number, email, website. And, you know, we're talking about the printed book. There's also a digital book. And the digital book is great to travel with you because you can click on the winery's address and it'll open up maps on your phone and map you right to the winery. It's like really set up to make it easy to get there.
Wow.
So I guess you don't have to be that adventuresome to do it on your own, but that's like two options.
Now in Eastern Mexico, you talked about the Casa Anza, and I was so fascinated with your photography in this particular section because each one of the storage tanks, one was a terracotta amphora, and then another one is stainless steel, another is made of black concrete, and then another one is French oak and cosciopesto. They were so creatively designed. They're just fascinating to look at.
They are obsessed with quality, and they're spending the money on the most incredible barrels and vats and so forth, like you're just describing, because they want to make the most incredible wine possible. And they do, and they sell out. And a lot of their wine goes to the local restaurants there because they know this guy's making amazing wines.
And the photograph of their vineyards, how many acres do they have of vineyard?
Oh, my gosh. Did I write it in there? I don't know. A lot.
Yeah, because you've got a photo of these vineyards that look like they go on to infinity. The position.
Right, I know what you're talking about.
Yes, and the leaves, the grape leaves, are just so tightly compressed together. It really, and it's amazing. They've turned the earth, and they allow things to grow in the middle, but it is pristine. It's absolutely, absolutely beautiful. When you're in Mexico,
you know, the reason why the vines look tight is because they have nets.
Oh.
And those nets are pulling all the leaves in. And the reason for the nets is that they don't want to share the grapes with the birds.
Oh, they are able to keep the birds out with those nets. They must be very tightly woven.
That's what the nets are for. Birds love grapes. In fact, they like to wait till harvest time at the same time you want to harvest.
Oh, that's interesting. Wow. And then you've got another place, the Independence of Mexico, and you've got this image of this massive church that is there, and that's the sanctuary of Jesus of Nazareth, and it's Atotonilco. That's the spelling of the community, I believe.
Atotonico.
Yes, sir. All right. It is beautiful.
This is a really ancient church there.
Michael, I know you mentioned earlier, you are getting ready in just a short period of time to go to Greece.
Yes.
When you come back, now you spend, 10 weeks or more to go to a place, go to the different wineries, you've got your itinerary all laid out, you're taking all the photography. It takes a while for you to determine, I'm sure, after your many, many photographs that you take, to determine what goes where and what you want to bring out in the way of information. This is quite a project. You have a team that helps you to do this.
It's the process. The photo editing is, because I take tens of thousands of photographs. Like when I go to Greece here, I'm going to be going for a month. Now imagine how much photography I create in a month.
Wow.
And when I went to Greece last year, I was there for a month and a half.
So this,
I dig in, I get involved, but the photography, because you know, to find these great shots and put them in the book, I really go through them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, it's masterful. And it's a type of book that maybe someone will not have the opportunity to go to Mexico, but it gives you an image of all this different culture and history that I just think is amazing. And you mentioned the UNESCO World Heritage Site when we first started chatting, downtown Querétaro, and it is beautiful. It is absolutely gorgeous.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, the book is fun even if you don't go.
Yes.
Because there's so much to learn, and it's so beautiful. Do you know that my books are now up to, I got four books, 39 awards.
Wow.
Is that exciting? And I know that the book is is a finalist in several organizations' contests. So I'm expecting more awards.
Well, you deserve every single one of them because you're the combination of quality and photography, information, all of the details that you put in, it is it's just wonderful. It's a treasure in a library. It can be a coffee table book, but it's not that huge. But there is so much we learn from your books, and you have already in this book on Mexico in the back, you talk about exploring Greece, which your next book is going to be about that. And you've got all of this photography that you probably took on your last trip to Greece. And by golly, it is just going to open up a whole world of information. You've got definitions regarding the wines. You've got all kinds of information regarding harvest terminologies. And just there's, and then your information on the ebook travel edition. You brought that up already. And that is emphasized. So all of these details, including your other books, are enclosed at the end of this one. Michael Higgins, this has been and always is a joy for me. And I hope my audience gets enthusiastic about it because I think travel is magical. And what you've been able to share is terrific. Now, they can go to your website, and that is exploringwineregions.com. Exploringwineregions.com. Michael, this has been a delight. Thank you for being my guest this evening.
Well, thank you for talking about my book. I'm glad you're impressed, and I always enjoy talking with you, Donna.
Well, there is so much to share. And travel, my goodness, we're in the spring period. People are looking at planning vacations. And here we've got, you know, such a beautiful environment. And I really appreciated your comment about not worrying about the cartels, because that is something that for many people, they go, thanks, I don't want to go there. I don't want to have anything to do with it. There's all kinds of misconceptions. And I think the more we can talk about what really is rich and valuable and so special about the people of Mexico and their culture, I think the better it's going to be.
The people are so nice, and they're so welcoming.
Oh, they are.
So friendly.
Yes, I've heard that from so many
people. It's a joy to go visit.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're welcoming.
They are. Well, Michael, exploringwineregions.com, that's your website. I look forward to the next time we have a chance to chat.
Well, thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much again.
Oh, you're more than welcome, and safe travels and happy travels to Greece.
Oh, I promise.
Yes. Until next time, Michael.
Yes.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Donna Sebo here. We're saying goodbye to Michael Higgins. And, oh, it's just a delight to interview him. And if you have a chance going to his website, be sure to check out the other books as well. They are a feast for the eyes, and oh my goodness, there's so many beautiful, wonderful things that we can enjoy and experience on this planet, and by golly, I just feel so pleased that I'm able to tell you about some of them. I just love what I do. Donna Sebo here, I'm taking a break. If you want to give me a buzz, 253-582-5597. The Donna Sebo Show is heard weekdays, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Callers are welcome to call in during the second half of the program at 253-582-5597. Please note that the announcement is made at the bottom of the hour if I'm not in studio, able to take phone calls. Warriors for Peace is heard every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. For current information regarding my email newsletter, programming, and appearances, go to DelphiInternational.com. For information on publications, including my award-winning children's books, audiobooks, and more, go to MrsSebo'sClassics.com. This is Donna Sebo. If you or someone you know is an author and would like to be interviewed on The Donna Sebo Show or Warriors for Peace, please send a copy of the publication along with contact information, phone number, email, and website to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. That's The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for review. Thank you. Who's coming up on... Who's coming up on The Donna Sebo Show? We're going to be talking tomorrow with Becky Chambers, and it's about one of my favorite topics, and that is about pets. Energy healing for pets. Oh, this is just a beautiful, beautiful book. Then we're going to be talking about Force Continuum with Wendy Zimmer and Portrait of Diverse Marriages. Disconnected is the primary title with Eleanor Vincent, Maya Blue with Brenda Coffey, Going Over the Mountain with Chris Woodside, Lean Agile Dilemma with Katie Tamblyn, and then we'll be talking with Amy about My Mother Always Says. Oh my goodness, we just have so many amazing people, amazing writers, and I am so pleased that I'm able to bring them here to you. Also on Warriors for Peace, we are going to be talking again with an American hero. That's the title of the book, Tom Davis Jr. and Jack Watts, an American hero. And this is in honor and respect for those that have served. This is the month when we have many stories to share about those that have served. And it is, well, it's important for us to realize that freedom is something that is earned. It is not something that is just given. And no matter where you go on this planet, for anyone that does not have freedom, they will say, I'll do anything to be able to achieve it. And that, I think, is especially significant. And don't forget, if you have missed a show, I know we're coming in to the end of time with the kids in school. Summer vacation is going to be starting up before we know it. And everybody is so busy getting ready for all of the different events, the proms, etc. If you miss a show, all you have to do is go into my archives and you'll find them in chronological order. And if you want to listen to any of the latest 15 hours of showtime, all you have to do is go in and turn on the player. That's right, one show right after the other. The latest 13 to 15 hours will be there for your listening pleasure. And we are in the process. The editing was done for the latest television show, the Donna Sebo Television Show Special Editions. And that is coming out, and it should be up on our site this coming week. So that is something that is evolving. It just takes time. You know, schedules get to be pretty intense. So until I'm able to check in and get that editing all done and have it all ready to go. And I appreciate the staff at TCTV, how they work with me on that. So it has been one very dynamic week, and I finally was able to go down and get the programming. And we will also be playing the audio of the latest program that was featuring John Amos and also Pamela Blake. I didn't give the correct name. And this is something that was mentioned in my newsletter, and it is going to be, I think, a very interesting show by two very, very special people. So that is going to be upcoming as well. Don't forget to check out the Author Showcase. And if you are an author and you would like to be featured on my television show and or my radio show, as it was mentioned before, you can send me a copy of your publication. But first, especially if it's with the television show, send me an email. And in sending that email, then I will be able to respond to you and send you all the information on the protocols. It is really quite an adventure to be doing both the radio programming as well as the television programming. But my goodness, life is meant to be interesting, and I do have some fascinating people on my program. So I wanted to be sure to fill you in on all of that. And then I've got an upcoming event. We're going to be talking about that pretty soon. So let me share with you something that Judy Reeves made a statement about. She was asked about her thoughts, and she was considered by some a visionary. And when she was asked about what she felt about the future, she said, "I believe that each and every human being has a need to express themselves creatively, and that each of us has been given a gift of self-expression that is creative and unique to us. A companion belief I hold is that each of us has a responsibility to use our gifts for the betterment of all. This is how we evolve, with each of us giving back in our own original and creative way. Our contribution to the whole raises all of us to a higher level, and without our creative expression, we would, as a species, become extinct." Some very powerful words by a woman that I think makes a statement that is extraordinarily real. Why? Because that is what creates the dynamics of change. Yes, the dynamics of change. Those creative individuals, some of them we've heard have done things in the garage. Other people have done things in one environment or another. And they come up with ideas and concepts that some of us would say, "Wow, that seems sort of simple. How come nobody ever did it before?" Well, sometimes there's complacency. Sometimes people don't have the tools or the money or the opportunity. But there's always that creative aspect that brings life into new environments that create change. And sometimes it's sort of tough handling that change. But I'll tell you what, change is an absolute. I don't know of any generation that has not had to experience it. I don't care where you are. I don't care what your dreams might be. There's just always, always something that is coming about that you'll find you didn't know anything about. And you'll go, how come I didn't know about this sooner? Well, I wanted to share with you something that crossed my desk that I had no knowledge about. It's about a cholesterol test. Oh, yes. That has become an industry in and of itself. Now, the standard lipid panel that you go in, every year you get this done, typically, with a usual annual examination, it's so focused on the LDL-C, or bad cholesterol, as a measure for assessing whether you have a potential for heart disease. However, there is a new test, and you may want to check with your doctor about this. It's called the APOB, the apolipoprotein B test. Now, let me spell that for you. APOLIPOPROTEIN, capital letter B, test. And they say it gives a much more accurate picture of a cholesterol-related risk. And what it does, it doesn't just rate the cholesterol situation, but it also counts the number of harmful particles that can damage arteries and cause heart disease. Now, there is a doctor, Anne Marie Navarre. She is an expert in heart disease prevention at the UT Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas, Texas. Why is this test so significant? Well, apparently your LDL and VLDL particles can get trapped in your arteries, leading to heart disease, and traditional cholesterol tests often don't rate the risk, apparently, in some people. So, especially if you are overweight or have diabetes or high triglycerides. The good news? If it is high, this ApoB level high, it can often be lowered with just some simple lifestyle changes. No big deal. Medications can be used, according to this article that I have here, but it's an addition. You can ask for this test. It's an addition to your cholesterol screening. You do not need to fast for it. What is the balancing factor if this should show that you need to make some changes? Exercise. Mm-hmm. And a balanced diet. And, hey, just take it from there. How many times are the solutions really very simple ones? It's quite an interesting thing, I find. And also, you know, people are living so much longer. And I'm hearing more and more about financial planners that are saying, well, you better plan for being alive a lot longer than you anticipated. We've got more people living over 100, more people living to be in their 90s than in previous history. And this has occurred relatively quickly within just a few generations. And why is that? Well, in some respects, it's better health care. We have evolved technologies which have enabled us to, well, survive situations that our previous ancestors couldn't have survived. But also, there's just so much that has changed. We have abundant food, and there's most of us have good housing. We have shelter from storms. We're not doing extremely hard labor. There's just all of these things that have shifted and changed for most people. And we were talking, and some friends and I were talking about that, and they said they have relatives that are easily going to live until their 90s, if not over 100. And they say it's amazing because their parents or their grandparents or their great-great-grandparents didn't have a hope or a prayer of living that long. And it really is quite, quite amazing. Oh, and by the way, if you have a challenge with eye dryness, now sometimes dependent on where you are and if you're outdoors working during the summer, you know, with the dust and everything else, your eyes can dry out very, very quickly. Well, just remember, as we're getting into the warmer temps, make sure that you have sunglasses to protect your eyes if you're going to be doing gardening in bright sunlight, and wearing a hat outside. And I've got a friend that ended up developing cancer on the top of his head because he was bald and he wasn't wearing protective covering on his head. And he went and had that taken care of, and it's not coming back. It was just there. It was a type of skin cancer. And I've always wondered about skin cancer in many respects because I think of the Aboriginal people. And I don't recall hearing stories about skin cancer with them. And they were very wise about their environments. I could be wrong. Maybe those of you that are listening would say, oh, Donna, you don't know about this, that, or the other. But many cultures did not have a lot of the cancers that we are experiencing at such a high level today. But I do know that the sun will really zap you big time if you're not careful. I was born and raised in Southern California, and that was something that when I was 16 years old, I saw what just baking in the sun to get a tan did to your skin, and it really messes it up. Not that there's anything wrong with taking a sun bath and being out in the sun, but you don't lay out there and just stay in it all the time. You have to think about what you do because it really shrivels you up like a prune. And I don't know about you ladies, but by golly, I don't want to look like a prune. Thank you very much. And I can tell you that when I've seen what's been demonstrated, especially if you're a young person, a young woman, you don't want to have those deep, deep gouges in your face. By golly, be very thoughtful about your sun and wind exposure. If you don't believe me, take a good look at the miners, the people that work outdoors all the time, and you will see exactly what I'm talking about. That I saw firsthand when I was 16. Also, remember that as you are doing your exercise, whatever you're doing, be aware of the temperature changes. And I know here in the Pacific Northwest, it's so easy to forget when we don't have that abundance of sun like we so enjoy during the summer months. We forget how vulnerable we can be. So just take care of yourself. Use a good batch of common sense and make sure that you take care of yourself and your exposure to that sun. Be wise. Donna Sebo here. There is so much that goes on in the world, and we often are not as aware as we should be of the options of people making a difference. People really saying, I can do my little part in making this world a better place. And this is something that I think the more we focus on that and just by being the best we can be right where we are, the better it is going to be all the way around. There is so much good in this world, so very much good in this world. And I think we need to be reminded of that when we hear about people that sometimes are doing horrible things. And you go, why? What is it that makes them do these things that create so much harm for others? And this goes around the world. Sometimes we wonder. Sometimes we wonder. But you know what? There was a woman by the name of Katie, and she's in Ohio. She said when she was four, her parents bought a farm, and there were farmers that were living near them, and their names were Harmon and Wilma. They actually lived in a log cabin, and they were in their senior years. And when their parents went out, when Katie's parents went out to meet these people, he said, you know what? We're so glad to have you as neighbors. Come on over anytime if you need anything. Yep. Neighbors, well, sometimes we need to take the time to get to know them. And you know what? I have wonderful neighbors in my neighborhood. And there's a lot of thoughtfulness and care. People mind their own business. They're busy. They're working. They've got families. But you know what? They always have a smile. And I learned something 3 years ago. If you want to get to know your neighbors, have a garage sale. And if you have free cookies out there, you're going to find that you're going to have a lot of people that will stop by. And the conversations you have, oh my word, they are amazing. You will learn so much about your neighborhood and maybe other neighborhoods that you didn't even have a clue about. Those warmer days, the sunshiny days, well, we've been experiencing them abundantly here in the Pacific Northwest, for which I am very grateful, because last year it wasn't that way, but this year it is. And I am looking forward to so much of what is going to be shared by so many, and I hope that you do too. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. When you can remember that, whenever you get discouraged, and just say, okay, things may not be going so well right now, but this too shall pass. This too shall pass. God bless. Be well. We'll be talking again soon. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.